So, welcome to the Literary Weapons Pod. I am Joshua. Sitting next to me is lovely Olivia. Say hello.
Hi, everybody.
So, we're just going to kind of go over what this podcast is going to be about and just kind of what we're into. So, mainly we're going to be reviewing books. I'm probably just going to be trying to convince Liv to read certain books and hopefully, you know, convince a few of y'all to read them as well. You know, also looking at TV and movies, the occasional Lego set, just really kind of whatever comes across our plate. So just to start out, wanted to go over kind of the podcast that brought us to this point that kind of inspired us. First off, for me, would have to be Lions Led by Donkeys by Joe Kasabian. It's an absolutely amazing podcast. It's the one I listen to day in, day out. You definitely give it a listen. The one that specifically led me to wanting to do a kind of book review deal is Two to Ramble. It's really inspired me for doing actual book and movie reviews. And then also the kind of the setup and style of what we're looking to do. And then last one would be Slowly Read. Got me into grimdark fantasy. And that's mainly what I read now. And really that just kind of set me back into reading. And I'm very thankful for him. So what do you have any podcasts that you want to shout out?
Ooh, Morbid.
Morbid?
Yeah. See, I don't do, like, I wouldn't say I would do, like, a historian or listen to people talk about books or movies. That's just not my thing.
But you're willing to listen to me
but
do
I'm
it?
Willing. Well, this is what we do on a daily basis, so we thought we'd just record it mm-hmm. and have other people listen to us. But Morbid is my favorite. It's a true crime. Mm-hmm. I can speak. True crime documentary series, and they just go over, I think they have like over 300 episodes, probably more than that. Mm-hmm. But they're on Spotify and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah. We will try and get on Spotify. Yeah, fingers crossed on that. So just going to dive straight into what we have planned for today. Just going to kind of go over some of the books that we get really fired up about. Just so you know, if you're listening and if these books are kind of on your favorites list, then this is probably the right podcast for you. If you haven't heard of any of these, give them a try. And then also, you know, if push comes to shove and you don't like any of these books, well, it's just gonna be more of the same, to be completely honest. But to start out, we're both sitting here with a glass of wine. I have a Pinot Noir by Juggernaut Wineries, and I'm really liking it so far. Mm. I'm gonna give it a like 4.2.
Yeah.
What's yours?
I have a Sauvignon Blanc.
Mm.
I don't know who created this. Oh no, it was a pretty label. Now I remember it. What is it called?
Is it The Prophecy?
Prophecy.
Yeah.
And I bought it because it was a pretty label.
As you do.
If that says anything about me and my taste in wine. So, yeah.
Well, cool. So, I will go ahead and go over our... I know I just used a number rating system for the wine. That's my bad. On this podcast, we have a set rating system. It's going to be 2 thumbs up is our best rating. And that's for something that, like, you would go out on the street corner and soapbox about it, about how great it is. You would walk up to anyone walking on the street and say, hey, you've got to read this. This is fantastic.
And these are the books that we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, all the ones that we talk about today, these are our 2 thumbs up. If you're any of our friends listening in, we've probably said something to you about these books. So I'm sorry that you have to listen to this again. For the 1 thumbs up, It's good enough to recommend if you're kind of in that like book recommendation conversation. You know, if someone's asking you about books, you might bring it up. But I wouldn't go out of my way to just talk to it with some random person. Or if you know it kind of fits their like their style of reading, you know, like if it's if that's their niche, then I would bring it up. Then we have neutral, you know, obviously don't really...
No thumbs involved.
Yeah, no thumbs, just a fist. so then one thumbs down is not good, but I wouldn't go out of my way to trash it. And then two thumbs down would be going on rants of hatred. But to be honest with you, I don't really finish two thumbs down books.
Yeah, it's always a DNF.
Yeah, I just... And that's really not what this kind of podcast is for. I'm not looking to trash any books or... I might trash a movie occasionally.
You will.
Yeah, I'll trash a movie, but I won't trash a book. I'm way too nice about books, I think. Mm-hmm. If you look at my Goodreads, it's all 5 stars.
Mm-hmm.
Or I just didn't finish it. So, just go ahead and go straight on into our books. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I only have 3. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I can go first. It's going to... We'll sprinkle yours in because I got a list.
Oh God!
So I'll start out with what I'm reading right now, "Faithful and the Fallen" by John Gwynne. I haven't finished it yet, so I can't speak on the entire work. First 3 books have been fantastic. Highlight is definitely the combat and the battle scenes. His other series, the Bloodsworn Saga, I believe it's called. If you know what I'm talking about, it gives you Skyrim vibes. The Faithful and the Fallen give Skyrim vibes as well. If you like Skyrim, you will probably like this. That's how I've recommended it to all my friends, and they've all agreed that it is Skyrim. And it also has a little bit of Mountain Blade Bannerlord in it. If you've played that game, Faithful and the Fallen, it's kind of the same deal in a great way.
So a video game and a book.
Yeah, it's very much a video game and a book. It's a lot of like big battle scenes and then running away.
Side quests.
Yeah, side quests, getting new followers, and then going back into a battle scene. But it's, I mean, that's such a like simplistic way to look at it, but it works.
Gotcha.
My like underappreciated kind of like unknown book I'm going to throw in here, or trilogy, sorry, Obsidian Path by Michael Fletcher. It only has like 2,000 reviews on Goodreads right now. Absolutely depraved main character. He's crazy sauce, very evil, but super cool magic system. This book has like it. I've thought about it consistently since I finished it. I finished the 3rd book probably like 2 years ago, or a year ago. It was a while ago.
It was a long time ago.
And at least once a week, I will find myself sitting up late at night thinking about the end of the series and about what it means throughout. Like, I want to reread it right now.
Is this the author that you messaged and said, hey, I really appreciate your work?
Yeah, he's really
cool. And he responded.
Yeah, he responded within like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I need to read his other stuff. But please, if you're listening to this, go out, buy his books. He's fantastic. Also, it's for people that know a little bit about philosophy, there's a big, like, ship of Theseus problem kind of idea throughout. And it's fantastic. It works. And I love it. I'll talk about it all day long. So, we are back. Do you want to go into your list?
Yeah. So, I only have 3. Well, 4, possibly. My favorite, all-time favorite book of in the entire world is Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. I actually fell in this love with this book. I read it in high school once, and I was like, eh, whatever. I'm a moody teenager. I don't care. And then I read it again while I was in college. I think maybe freshman year or junior, or no, not junior, sophomore year. I mean, I was still a moody teenager then, I guess.
Yeah.
Just an older teenager.
Yeah, moody adult.
A moody adult. And I try to read it yearly, except I've been really bad the last 2 years.
That's my fault.
Possibly. Because you throw so many books at me that I don't have time to fit it in. But what I love about Little Women is just the realistic nature of what it is to be a woman and to know that, you know, it just does a really good job at showing how extraordinary it is to be ordinary and how that doesn't mean that your dreams or your life doesn't hold any value. As most of you know, it follows four sisters way back when, you know, when they had to use fires to heat houses and whatnot. And it goes through their childhood and into adulthood. And you really get to see, you know, the growth of what... just their growth in general. Like, it's just a... how best describe it? It's really difficult.
I don't know. I feel like it gives a really good snapshot of their life throughout their entire life. It's like taking an outside look into someone else's life and soul.
Yeah.
In a really beautiful way.
But it's five women technically, because Marmee is the mom, and you get to see her. But it's kind of backwards for her because in the book, she's, of course, a mother of four children, four girls. And the older those girls get, the more open she is to talking about her childhood, which I love.
Don't spoil nothing.
I'm not going to spoil nothing. But, I mean, was that spoiling it?
Kind of. You're talking a lot about the plot.
Well, it's a good plot. And if you haven't read it by now, I mean, it's an old book. It's one of those that it's like everybody knows.
Mm-hmm.
Like Fahrenheit 4, whatever. Everybody knows it. But anyways, that's my all-time favorite book. Another thing that I love about it, and that my mom actually... she hasn't read the book, but she's watched the movie. And she mentioned that Marmee, the mom, she is a very good picture on what it is like to be an actual mother. She does a very good job at taking a snapshot into the heart of mothers. And I really like that, and I appreciate that. So that's why that's my favorite book in the entire world. Never to be replaced.
Yeah, we'll see.
Shut up.
There's a few others on this list that might replace it. Going back to the violence and dark side of literature.
Yeah.
And actually, this is just how it worked out. Like, the most violent and dark book on my list is up next.
Jesus Christ.
The Burning by Evan Winter. The third book is about to come out. First two are the most fantastic revenge story. Do you remember when I was reading these? The Rage of Dragons?
The one with the dragon on the cover?
Yeah.
Yes.
So this main character was the most deranged and determined person I've ever met in my life. Just his character alone is worth reading the entire book. The other characters, they're still good. I don't remember any of them just because of how much the main character just takes over the story. This is a comparison I'll get you. He's like an Aaron Yeager type character. Will do
Jesus.
anything to get his revenge.
Oh, Lordy.
Yeah, so...
But that's really hard to compare, because Aaron is just a different monster in character of his own.
They're very different, but, like, his determination and, like, pure obsession with his goal, and no matter what it takes, who he has to kill, what he has to do, he does it without question. And not spoiling anything at all, it's a lot of just like training montages, like the Rocky training montage, except just like deranged. That is the word for this series. Combat is fantastic, whatever, but this series gets you by completely investing in the main character. I've never had a book where I stood up and cheered like reading this. I mean, every time he, you know, hunts down and kills one of his enemies, you're on the edge of your seat, fired up and ready. And it's shit. Fantastic.
Well, shout out to Attack on Titan. If you haven't watched that, it's on Hulu.
Yeah, you should watch Attack on Titan.
10 out of 10. If you can't tell by my first book recommendation, I'm not into anime, but I was into Attack on Titan. So, yeah.
Attack on Titan is fantastic. Everyone should watch it. I'm going to go ahead and jump into something that you are a fan of. Now this, like, there's nothing that we here on this podcast are going to say that's going to add to the conversation of Brandon Sanderson.
But, nothing can. It's already there.
Yeah, everyone who has a microphone or a camera has and is into books talks about Brandon Sanderson. But this kind of a list is not complete without The Cosmere. It's an absolute masterwork. The characters, the world, everything is, I'm willing to say, perfect. You're in the middle of Mistborn, right?
I'm in the second book. Yep.
I think you finished the second book.
No, I did finish the second book. Just kidding. I'm on the third. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I forgot.
Mistborn is just a perfect trilogy. I'm on book three of the Stormlight Archive. I got to read the shoot-offs of the Cosmere before I can get back into book three. But Brandon Sanderson, I'm willing to give him the GOAT title.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really nothing that we can add to this conversation other than just admitting, like, he's the best.
Mm-hmm. But there's times when I'm reading the book where it's like, there's nothing happening, and I got bored, honestly. But then, like, 20 pages later, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, you just get absolutely sucked in. And that's the thing, is, like, every time I read one of his books, I start out with, like, okay, I start out with that doubt of there's no way that, like, he's actually the greatest. Like, this book is a little boring at the beginning, whatever. But then, I mean, the Sanderlanch, whatever, but, like, he has a way of making these super long books just, you're completely invested, and I don't know.
And, like, there's no cursing.
Yeah, there's no cursing.
So, if that's your thing, go for it.
Yeah, if a parent is listening to this and you want to get your kid into reading, get him to read The Cosmere.
Mm-hmm. And the romance is pure.
Yeah, it is pure. I would give it, like, a solid, like, PG-13.
Yeah, definitely.
Because there's some violence, but, like, it's not over the top.
No, it's not.
Like,
I would let, like, I don't know, like a 13-year-old.
Yeah, I'm saying PG-13.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say Mistborn might be even a little bit, you could go younger.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, on the edge of young adult.
Mm-hmm. But the second one, it's, like, maybe a year or two older wouldn't...
Yeah, if you put, like, space a year between books, you'd probably be fine.
Yeah.
So, for my next one, on the similar level as Brandon Sanderson, Joe Abercrombie, the First Law trilogy. He is, like, his reputation's kind of similar to Brandon Sanderson. He's in that GOAT conversation just, I think, a lot of the time for his character work. He's really the best with, like, you get to watch a character grow, and then other characters, you get to watch them decay from, you know, that bright spot. And it's often, like, the characters at the beginning that are the most despicable and horrible people, by the end, you empathize with them the most. And then these characters at the beginning that you really are like, wow, that's a great person, by the end, you get dredged like through their soul, and they end up being the evil ones. So, like, I don't know how to describe and give it justice, but, like, his work on the characters, especially, like, First Law trilogy, I'm making my way to the Age of Madness trilogy right now. That's my goal for this year, is to finish all his stuff in that universe. But the First Law trilogy is just incredible. And it has the best soft magic system I've ever read, where you don't get to know how the magic system works. You kind of just figure it out as it happens. But by the end of three books, I don't understand what was going on with the magic. And I'm fine with that. Now, like, Brandon Sanderson, he explains everything.
But he does it after a couple things happen. So you're kind of left in the dark a little bit, but not the entire book. Or not nearly.
Yeah, but
more than 10, 20 pages.
But he answers those questions eventually. Like, Joe Abercrombie, those questions don't get answered. It's just,
yeah,
that's how the world is. And if a character doesn't go out of their way to ask, you don't know. And I appreciate it. I'm a big fan of, you know, figuring out how the magic works in books. But there is something to be said for that soft magic, where that's just how the world is, and the characters don't necessarily understand it. And if they do, they're not repeating it in their inner monologue, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Like, he kind of treats the reader, it's almost like getting treated as an adult, where, like, you're not being hand-fed information. Or, like, if you were in real life, your inner monologue isn't going over how physics work. Like, you just understand that it does, so it really doesn't come up. That's kind of how his magic works.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Where, like, it happens very organically. And really, that's how his characters work, too, is very organic. You, like, there's nothing that is there just for the plot, you know? Like, how there's a lot of books where, like, something will happen, and you're like, oh, yeah, that had to happen for the plot. There really isn't anything like that in Joe Abercrombie's stuff. It all makes sense with what's going on.
He's one I'm actually interested in reading. Not so much, like, as much as the other Brandon Sanderson books, but every time you finish one, you sit there and you're just like, what?
Whoa. Yeah.
Oh my god.
And I'm really surprised I haven't, like, gotten his other stuff.
Yeah.
I've been really good about holding myself back, because if I get one, I'm getting all, like, five books I have left.
Well, what was the series that we got you all for Christmas?
That was Faithful in the Fall, and that was the first one.
The Joe Abercrombie books?
No, that was John Gwynn.
Oh, okay. Never mind then.
Yeah, I'm on book three in 2 weeks.
Jesus Christ.
So, yeah.
Side note, I gave him book one, my sister gave him book two, and my mom gave him book three and four or something. So he got an entire series for Christmas.
And I've read 2.5 books in 2 weeks.
Dude, good.
Each one is like 700 pages. I have a problem
Like yeah, just go ahead and admit it to the people, hun. You have a severe problem.
Yeah. You want to talk about your next book?
Yeah, sure, darling. Okay, so my next all-time favorite book is Before the Coffee Gets Cold by, I'm sorry if I butcher this, Toshikazu Kawaguchi. So this is a story set in Asia, and it is a story about a little cafe, and the cafe has a secret. The cafe has a little chair in the corner table that may or may not send people back in time. Well,
may or may not, like there's a question.
No, it does. It does. Everybody, okay, it says that in the description, what the chair does, and, you know.
Oh, so this is a, like, we can't talk about the plot in
no,
this
I'm
discussion.
Not talking about the plot. So.
Just, what do you like about it?
What do I like about it?
Yeah, like, what are the top three things that you like about it?
Well, if you would let me.
Uh-huh.
Hun, okay. I love you. So one, I just noted that it is probably the most heartwarming story I think I have ever read. I actually gave it to my best friend Audrey for Christmas because we always give something small, and I gave her the book. She gave me a puzzle. Shout out to Aud. But it's just I finished reading it and I was just like, gosh, I just want to give Josh a hug, and I just want to, you know, we have a dog named Raven and a cat named Binks. We didn't have Binks at the time, but I just wanted to give Raven a hug after I was done finishing reading it. But the story, it is heartwarming, but it also is heartbreaking.
So there's just a lot of heart.
There's a lot of heart. Its main focus, I would say, is on just the short time that we have on Earth with the people that we love, and it focuses on a lot of stories. So it's there's like four or five little stories in it. So it's four or five stories. They all merge together, of course, but there's like four or five main characters. I've said four or five about 8 billion times. I'm sorry. Four or five times. But they all blend together. Again, it's focused on one cafe, so they all kind of have to blend together a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll meet some characters that they just seem like real people who have lived real lives and have problems that are real and relatable, for one. Not just in a way that it's like the same thing has happened to me, but more so I've felt the same way. In a different scenario, possibly, but it's just very, it's very heavy, I will say. It is very heavy. Like I said, I wanted to give Josh a hug and Raven a hug. So maybe don't do it if you're, you know, not in a great place. But now looking back at it, I can see, now looking back on it, I can say it's heartwarming. But then when I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, that's heartbreaking. So, you know, it's one of those where it's just, it changes over time. And as you digest it, your opinion of it, not your opinion, but your mood towards it changes.
That's kind of how my opinion for Obsidian Path has changed.
Yeah.
The more I look back on it.
See, I love those books where you can just, you finish it and you're like, ew. And then you look back on it, a month later and you're like, oh my God.
It just sticks with you. Yeah.
But that's all I have for Before the Coffee Gets Cold. It's a really short read. Probably, I don't even think it's 200 pages. It might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really small.
And there are a couple other books that are Before the Coffee Gets Cold, and then there's, you know, I think two other books. I'm not sure if it's a series technically or if it's just
an anthology.
Yeah. But I have that one on the shelf. I think. I'm not sure. but I definitely want to read it. And it only took me probably, so I read probably like 10 to 20 pages a night. Josh probably 50 to 80 a night. But I finished it in a week. It was beautiful. So 10 out of 10. Recommend.
We don't do number systems
here. Oh, sorry. Well, two freaking big old thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
For that. And as you can tell right now, I only have three top books. So my word is God, okay?
Mm-hmm. So speaking of God, that kind of feeds into one of my books, Between Two Fires by Christopher Buhlman. Actually, I'm going to use this to say everything by Christopher Buhlman I've read, all two books, have been fantastic. I just chose Between Two Fires because the other book I read by him, Black Tongue Thief, is book one of like a huge series that he's planned. Book one was fantastic. But Between Two Fires... So if you play video games, it is Dark Souls, Elden Ring, Bloodborne. It's that on a page. So if you're into that, this is the book you need to read. It makes you kind of feel dirty. Like
what kind of dirty?
Just like grimy. Like if you rolled around in a ditch and we're starving. Mm. Like that's how I felt throughout this book. It's grim dark to a T, and I think it's the best version of grim dark that I've read, because it's the dark parts are as dark as you can get. There's parts in this that will make you want to cry, and it's just depressing. But throughout all of it, there's this little glimmer of hope at the end, where I think that little glimmer of hope, that beacon of light, makes the dark so much darker because of that contrast.
Yeah, the gap gets bigger.
Yeah, and so, like, there's all these horrible things going on, and then one of the characters is just pure, innocent light. And it's them walking through this horrible, horrible world. And a lot of the book is told from their perspective. And I think it makes it feel worse. Just because you see how beautiful that one character is. And then you see the world around them. And this is a short book. I think it's like 200-300 pages. I read it in like 2 days. I could not put this book down. It's one of those where I'm probably going to reread this every couple years. It's just that good. The world building per page is insane. Where like, I don't know how, but Christopher Buhlman packs in so much in each page. Where, I mean, I would love, you know, more books in this world, in this style, really. But it didn't overstay its welcome. Where, like, I never, for a single page, got tired of what was going on.
Hmm. That's hard to find, I feel like.
Yeah, and that's why I have it on this list, is because it was almost a perfect book to me. Where every character, every single word on the page felt like it belonged there.
Mm.
Like, I couldn't edit any of this out. So, that's a standalone, which we love standalones in this house.
We love a good standalone.
Yeah, no commitment to a whole series. So, for my last main book, and it's kind of a standalone, I told Liv it was a standalone when I bought it. That was kind of a lie.
Joshua.
There are other books, but you can treat this one like a standalone. Hyperion by Dan Simmons. It's a retelling of Canterbury Tales, but sci-fi. So it's a bunch of people on a journey telling their stories of their past, how they got there, why they're there. And then, unlike Canterbury Tales, I think this is why... So I love Canterbury Tales. There's a reason why I have Hyperion on this list and not Canterbury Tales. And that's because the overarching meta story actually matters. Where in Canterbury Tales, like, when you're reading the people's short stories, they're really good. And then when it cuts to them sitting around, you know, sitting around the fire talking, you just kind of want to skip through it.
I feel like Canterbury Tales is more for entertainment value nowadays. Back then it might have been something more, but nowadays I feel like it's a little bit more entertainment and like a literary learning tool.
Yeah. But I still think there's something to be said for, like, it's an amazing, like, there's a lot of things that it talks about that are still very, like, very close to today. But Hyperion, it makes, like, the journey that they're on more interesting. And it makes it actually matter to the story. So the reason that they're all there ties into each story in a very, like, interesting way. Each story is a different style. It's a different genre. There's a couple romance stories. There's some ones that are action, adventure, everything. I'm not going to talk about each story, but if you have read this, General Kassad's story is one that stuck with me. It's one I think about all the time. It has everything. It's one that's... It has amazing action. It has some romance. It has some adventure.
Romance is something Josh never reads. So when it's in a book...
There's some books that I read that have romance. That,
yes, but you're not a romance
book
reader at all.
No.
So whenever there is romance in a book and he tells me about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, no way. Yeah. Yay.
There's two pages of Spice are good enough for me. But yeah, Hyperion, it really blends so many styles and genres in a very, like, unique and organic way. And I'm going to read the other books in the quote-unquote series. But if you want to treat this as a standalone, by all means do.
Good Lord. Okay. You're a mess.
What's your last book?
My last book is The Color Purple by Alice Walker. You've probably heard about this one. It's Emma Watson's favorite book, too, which Emma Watson, Hermione Granger, or one of her favorite books. She put it on a list somewhere when she posted about her favorite books, and I said, oh my gosh, I need to read that book. And so I read that book.
You didn't tell me that's why you read it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
She had interviewed with, like, Time Magazine or, you know, Teen Vogue or, I don't know, something, and I saw it. It's not the only reason. I did pick it up without reading the cover. Or reading the title, sorry, just looking at the cover in the store, and I picked it up and I turned it over and I was like, huh, this sounds like that book that Emma Watson read. And then I flipped it over and looked at the title.
Okay, so what'd you like about it?
Okay, so...
Gonna keep you on task.
So the book basically is a story told from the perspective of Celia... Goodness gracious. Celia. Some people call it Celia. It doesn't end with an A. It ends with an E. So I call her Celie. Because. Yes. Because that's how it looks when you, like, when you look at it. C-E-L-I-E. That's Celie. Isn't it?
I'm horrible with names.
I've heard people say Celia, which doesn't make any sense. And I think they're on crack cocaine or something. But anyway, Celia was born in the early 1900s, and it follows her throughout her journey in life, her struggles as a black woman in the Deep South. She's been through abuse at the hands of everyone who should be protecting her, including her family, her husband, including her father. And it's just, it's very, very sad, her story.
So don't ask you for happy book recommendations?
Basically. No, I read happy books. Right now I'm reading Mistborn, which is kind of happy.
It's not going to be happy for long.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Okay, I think it's just the sad books that hit home and stay with me. Like, fantasy books, I love. And I love them for entertainment value, though. But for, like, for it to hit my heart, it's got to be a sad book. At some, in some way or some meaning. But anyway, so the book is entirely written in, not chapters, but letters. Celie writes them to God. And throughout the story, you know, she writes it to God. Some of them she writes to her sister, but mainly to God. And it's really, she writes to God as a child, and she continues throughout her adulthood because she's been abused, and she feels nobody else can listen but God. And it states that very, 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 very early on in the book. So I will say that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a spoiler, you know. If you look at it from above and you're like, why is this child writing to God? It's kind of obvious that nobody else is listening to them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Her story is just, it's so brave and bold, and she breaks all kinds of rules in her life to find freedom and happiness. But she does it so, gosh. Her life is just a mess, but it's the way that she looks at life and she looks at love ends up being so beautiful that it's definitely worth a read and learning about her story. Who was it? Not Reese Witherspoon. Good Lord. Oprah Winfrey.
How did you get Reese Witherspoon from
Oprah Winfrey? I really don't know. Okay, whatever. But she was, she played her in a movie. And I'm pretty sure there is a movie coming out or has came out.
I think it's, but that's the musical version.
Yes, it is a musical. And I'm greatly disappointed that it is a musical because, I mean, music is a big part in the story, but.
It's the Mean Girls.
Not that much. Don't slander the Mean Girls musical movie.
Anyways.
Next.
Next is, I have a little section in my notes. Sorry, I'm not doing this off of, like, off the top of my head.
Yeah, nobody could do that.
Well, some podcasters do.
Well, they're on crack.
Yeah. So, my honorable mentions are more of just authors that I like. I don't want to shout out any specific works by them. It's more of just their entire works.
Yeah. I'll add one, too.
Okay. I'll say this is really, like, my kind of bread and butter of just throwing out authors' names of people that I like. So, I'll start out with a sad one to match Liv's area of expertise. Cormac McCarthy. If you want to, like, feel, like, a severe hatred for humanity.
Jesus Christ.
Well, all of his books are about how, like, we're horrible to each other.
Yeah, that's true.
That's, like, the underlying theme for all of his books is how, like, humans are just so mean and vile to each other.
Yeah.
But he writes it in such a beautiful way. Like, the words that he chooses to describe despicable acts, it's art. And I know all books are art, whatever. But some art's better than others. That's true. I'm willing to admit.
Yes.
And McCarthy really goes out of his way to describe some like something as horrible and despicable as just like cold-blooded murder in a way, like the prose is just beautiful. And
respect.
Yeah, like it, and it, but like it's another one of those where like it makes you feel dirty for enjoying reading the book.
Mm.
But like the message behind it really like hits home.
Yeah.
So whenever I read these, it sends me into a little depression spiral.
Yeah, slightly. Every time you read him, you're like, Liv, I love you.
Yeah. It,
and then you're like, I need a refresher. And then go read like one of the following authors that you're going to talk about in here to
so
to relieve your depression spiral.
I have 3 books on my shelf right now as emotional refresher books.
Which is very important because the books that y'all read, you read particularly, it's very emotionally
draining.
Yeah. So you gotta have something to balance it out.
So my choice for balancing out books is by Terry Pratchett. His books are really funny. It's all about satire of like modern day life.
Yeah.
Through an absurdist fantasy setting. And it like he tackles like real issues. Like he the one I'm reading right now is talking about like police brutality.
Yeah.
But he does it in a satirical, truly funny way. And it really like I use it as my emotional reset button, and it just makes me happy.
Yeah.
Like, you've heard me laugh out loud.
Yeah, well, I've been asleep, and you have definitely laughed, like, your guts out and woken me up before. But I've read Good Omens, which is by him and Neil Gaiman. Is that who you
say? I think that's how you say his name.
Good Omens, it was turned into a series, I think, or a TV series, but it's so cute and it just made me so happy. And I think I read it after
I think it was after The Color Purple.
I think it was after The Color Purple too.
See, like everyone needs like that little just reset, like that little dopamine hit.
Yeah, you can't go so long without having some form of joy.
Yeah.
In your, you know, in your books.
I do like reading dark and depressing things.
You do. You really do.
But I always have that, like, I always make sure I have a Terry Pratchett book on the shelf
and
ready to go.
And you know your limit to where you're like, okay, I've read enough sad stuff and really emotionally challenging things. I need something to prep me up. Which is important as a reader to be able to say, hey.
Yeah.
I need something happy.
Yeah.
Which is, it's silly, but it's true.
No, it helps because, like, there's times, like, when I'm reading, like, these, like, heavy, heavy books where I really consider, like, do I want to keep reading? Or, like, do I want to take a reading break? And I realize it's not the books that are getting to me. It's, like, the content. I need that change up. Actually, so another author that I kind of use as like that emotional break is Andy Weir or Wire. Not sure really how to say his name. Sorry, Andy, if by some miracle you're listening. He does like really like the best sci-fi that I've read. I have an engineering background, and the problem I have with a lot of sci-fi is it kind of just muddles the science where like the fiction really takes over and like they pretend to do science and they just get simple stuff wrong. That really bothers me for some reason.
That's frustrating.
It's rough because like there's a lot of like really good science fiction out there that I know I should enjoy. I just cannot, because they get just simple things wrong.
Yeah, I have a BA in psychology, so if that says anything about my favorite books.
Yeah, well, I'm from aerospace engineering, but I think he was actually, he was a engineer for NASA, in something in the space industry, but it makes a lot of sense. Like, his science works. If you're from a STEM, like heavy math background, his books are amazing. Mm. He goes out of his way to make sure that when he does these like sci-fi things, that the actual like physics and science works. He's not afraid of, you know, shouting out a few equations, which I enjoy. I understand if you don't like it, but you know, it just works. But yeah, so I mean, if you know, everyone needs those little emotional breaks. So to end off, this is my last point. If you know, I've done this, I know you've done this, where you hit that reading roadblock where you pick up a book, decide you don't want to read it, pick up the next one, don't want to read it, and it's, you realize that you just aren't in the mood for reading. Don't necessarily give up on that next book. I have figured out that one of the things that keeps me in it is reading manga, specifically Berserk and Vagabond. When I, you know, I feel like my brain's melting, I've read too many words,
mm-hmm.
but I refuse to take that clean break from reading and dive back into TikTok and video games and movies and all that. Find something in the same vein as reading, whether it's comic books, manga, you know, visual novels, something that
articles, heck, just,
yeah, news articles. Don't dive too deep into news articles.
No, news articles about reading, though. I feel like that's really...
Yeah.
I do that a lot.
That's a slippery slope,
though. It is a slippery slope, but I love it.
But, you know, find those, like, reading-adjacent things, and it can keep you from, you know, falling away from the hobby of reading.
Yeah.
Because once you fall away, it is hard to get back into it. I've fallen away. It took me 6 years to get back into reading.
Well, the reason you got back into reading, for one, is because I was on a reading streak when we met.
Yes.
And I was hot, and I was burning books left and right. And that was what we talked about on our first couple of dates. And
so it's your fault.
It is your fault. It really is. Gosh darn. Little did I know that I would fall into a slump for the following next couple of years, and mm-hmm. you would be...
Fill up bookshelves?
We have about 1, 2, 3, 4, technically.
Yeah, we have 4 bookshelves.
Oh, lordy.
But we've been rambling for a while.
We have.
We need to cut this off. If you're listening, thank you for listening. Hopefully we can get a few more episodes out soon. And yeah, just thank y'all for your time.
Thanks, guys.
Adios.
Bye, guys.